In today's episode of Zen Founder, Sherry interviews Danielle Tate. Danielle is the founder and CEO of MissNowMisses.com, a multi-million dollar online name change company that's served more than 300,000 customers. As a female founder in her 20s, she noticed that few business guides offered step-by-step advice to smart but inexperienced entrepreneurial women. So she wrote a book called Elegant Entrepreneur, The Female Founder's Guide to Starting and Growing Your First Company. Her book has been voted the number one best entrepreneurship inspiring book, the number one personal development book for entrepreneur, and the number one nonfiction book for women in their 20s on Goodreads. It's written as a guide from idea to exit for women with ideas, not MBAs. It's a good conversation. Let's dive in. We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Well, perhaps we can begin, if you wouldn't mind just saying a little bit about your journey into entrepreneurship. I know that you have recently written a book about your story and your experience. And you mentioned somewhere that you began your company with relatively little business training. So I'm just curious how that happened for you, how you ended up becoming an entrepreneur.
I am an accidental entrepreneur with zero business background. I actually have a bachelor's in biology, and I am the bride that had trouble changing her name. And instead of just complaining about it and doing it, I set out to create a solution to the 13-hour hassle for newlyweds and innovated a new sort of technology and niche within the wedding industry with Miss Now Misses. So going from idea to building a company with over 300,000 customers in two countries has taught me a lot. And I've become an entrepreneur, but it was not the traditional way.
You were kind of that classic girl with a problem, and you had a great idea about how to solve it, and thus a business was born.
Yes.
Very fantastic. So how long have you been working on Miss Now Misses?
Miss Now Misses launched in 2007, so it's been almost a decade.
Okay. What have been some of the ups and downs for you as you have watched the company grow?
One of the best ups, I think, for any company was our first customer. After all of the research, all of the coding, all of the creating of content and making the website, within 30 minutes of turning on Google Ads, we had our first customer purchase, Wendy. And that was just one of those epic moments where I built it and someone bought it and they continued to buy it. And so that was very much a memory I will always treasure as an entrepreneur. Another thing that we did very well was strategic partnerships. So partnering with The Knot made my year that particular year. And then we had a lot of trouble with copycats. I defended Miss Now Misses' intellectual property in multiple court cases, one of which was federal court. And I was 8 months pregnant on the witness stand. And that was very much a stressful, difficult low point in the company's history. But I grew a lot from it. And we created technologies to protect ourselves from that. And then another high point is just a paradigm shift that we had. We were always after the brides, the 2.3 million brides each year. And one day walking through a Rite Aid, I saw gift cards hanging by greeting cards, and there weren't any in the bridal shower and wedding greeting card section. And so realizing that it's not just brides, but the 100 wedding gifts, looking for the perfect wedding gift allowed us to market Miss Now Misses gift cards as the perfect wedding gift. And we now have Miss Now Misses gift cards in Target stores nationwide. And that's a tremendous high point for the company.
Fantastic. I love the way that you talk about your business because you can just see the way that your ideas have generated out of very practical moments in your life. Walking through a Rite Aid, being married yourself and realizing what a hassle it was to change your name.
Yeah, three trips in line to get my driver's license was the impetus that sparked Miss Now Misses. So yes, I do solve problems and create new platforms and brand extensions based on problem solving.
I think that's a great thing for for people to realize too, because I think some people are kind of chasing a big idea that feels like it has to be very separate from their day-to-day lived experience. And as your story points out, so many of the great ideas that have a lot of traction are just very practical problems, solutions that happen in our day-to-day lives.
I agree. There are people that are like, oh, I just wish I had that big idea. And I look at them and say, well, do you have any problems? Is there anything that bothers you? Is there something that could be done better that you deal with on a daily or weekly basis? I think problem solving is a great way to start a startup.
So how did you shift from, I mean, you've been running your company for 10 years and you recently decided to write a book and shift from your own experience into sharing your experiences with other people? How did that happen?
Much like Miss Now Misses, I saw a problem and needed to make a solution. So as an accidental female founder in tech, especially many years ago, there weren't a lot of female founders to look up to. And there wasn't a book that mapped out, here's what it is to be an entrepreneur. Here are the steps from idea to exit and how it feels that built you from, spoke to you as an intelligent human being, but someone without a business background and built you through SWOT analysis. And so in reading some of the statistics and realizing how successful female founders are, but how few of them there are, I felt the need to fill that gap. And so I wrote Elegant Entrepreneur, the Female Founder's Guide to Starting and Growing Your First Company, to fill that void and to be the book that I desperately searched for when I started Miss Now Misses so many years ago.
Say a little bit more about the problem. I mean, you're probably more up to date on the stats about female entrepreneurs than many of our listeners are. What were the stats that really were staggering to you?
So the good news, the good stats that always make you happy and say, hooray, we're female founders. Very recently, there was a study done and they showed that investors that back female-founded companies and startups receive a 35% higher return on their investment. And that those women are, I think it's 15 or 18% more likely to be profitable in the first year as compared to their male counterparts. And so women are outstanding entrepreneurs. But then the other statistics are in 2014, there were only 18% of startups that had a co-founder that was female or a female founder running the company. And that's a very small percentage in my mind.
What do you make of that? This is a problem that's longstanding. I realize you don't have all of the answers right now, but just from your anecdotal experience, what do you think is at play in those differences?
So one theory I have is that element, that characteristic that women have of looking before we leap, that adds to the success of our startups. We don't just jump into partnerships. We don't launch a product that's not completely built. And so that caution helps in our profit and success of our companies. But that same risk adverse feeling, I think, is holding women back. Women that have ideas but don't know if they're good enough and are worried about all the steps between going from idea to exit. And so the book I wrote was meant to demystify that process and just spell it out with the hopes of, here's how you do it. Here's how you vet your idea using the innovation gauntlet. And then here are the next steps to building a company around it and how it feels and tools to use while you're in those steps.
So one of your thought is that it's some natural cautiousness that both makes women excellent entrepreneurs, but might make it very difficult for them to get started or to take some of the risks that are necessary in starting a business.
Yes. And I think another challenge is funding. If you look at venture capitalists, I believe less than 4% are females. And so if you have an idea specific to women or your culture or your ethnicity, and you're pitching to an entire table or room full of elderly Caucasian gentlemen, it can be very challenging to help them understand the problem and how amazing your solution is and why they would fund it. And so that's another challenge that I think inhibits women who have great ideas to actually start up.
So there's some internal challenges and some system challenges, some external
challenges. In my opinion,
yes. Did you bump up against any of those within your own journey?
I did not take outside funding, so I did not personally experience the exterior challenge of venture capitalists. But in doing some of the interviews for the book, many women, actually all women that had taken outside funding, talked about the need to make analogies to help investors understand what they were trying to pitch. Whereas if they were pitching to women or a more diverse venture capitalist board, it would have been much easier for them to understand the problem and the solution.
They wouldn't have to make a football analogy or...
Exactly. Or for example, Elise Wang of SnobSwap has an online curated collection of used designer goods from consignment shops throughout the United States. And so she's pitching and this gentleman's like, well, who would buy a used handbag? I'll go ask my wife. And she took that second to make the analogy. She's like, well, would you buy a used Maserati? And he's like, oh yeah, actually that would interest me. So it's communication and understanding and just diversity in general.
Being able to speak the language of funders.
Yes. And women innately, or not innately, but socially are less inclined to brag about themselves. And as you're pitching your product, it's you. It's your idea, but investors invest in the jockey, not the horse. So you need to say, you know, these are my qualifications. This is my passion. This is why I am the person to make this idea successful. And I need your help. And so again, there's some social stigmas and ways that we all grow up, or many of us grow up, that might inhibit us a little bit and are easily overcome if you understand the obstacle ahead of you.
That's something that I have talked a lot with female founders about, the sense in which if you are someone who has practiced being appropriately self-promoting or assertive or very clear about your accomplishments, that skill set requires a lot of maybe extra work for women, period. But then it's this sort of fine line in how that's perceived by those around us. If an assertive, very confident woman is sort of doing exactly what's asked of her in the startup space, but can maybe easily be perceived as bitchy or as too assertive. It kind of cuts both ways, I guess. There's maybe a double standard that still exists around women's confidence and assertiveness.
I agree.
Can you say a little bit about how being a woman and self-funding might have some unique experiences? Obviously, if you're self-funding, you have much more control. You aren't kind of kowtowing to funders. But were there particular challenges that you experienced? Because I'm curious if the stats are that much different in self-funded startups versus VC startups in terms of female founders.
So my experience with Miss Nummis is I have two co-founders and we each chipped in $5,000. So we bootstrapped from a very small amount of money. And so I haven't accepted outside funding or needed loans. So that makes my experience, I think, very different from the average startup or growing company that does need to do those things. I have heard from various interviews and discussions that it can be more difficult to receive a loan as a woman. And things like the Small Business Association are trying to create loans and grants to help offset that. But it's interesting that you said the word power and funding. In the 28 interviews that I did in getting prominent female founders, entrepreneurs, CTOs, CFOs to tell me about starting their company, growing their company, and their experiences and their emotions, the word power was brought up in every single interview. And it's something I think is very important to women. And it's something that being a female founder allows you to have, which is the power to control your company, your paycheck, your working hours, your family life balance. And I think that's a very beautiful thing.
So power is a great motivator. To have
yes.
that control over your life. So how has this all been sustainable for you? You are a working parent. You have a wife. Or sorry, you have a husband. Maybe you have a wife. I don't know.
I have a husband who's a saint.
You know, you are practicing Pilates. You're taking care of your mind and body and relationships. And then writing a book and running a company. How does that work?
It doesn't always work. I won't say that I'm perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but prior planning has helped me tremendously. I color code everything on my Google Calendar, and it helps give me a visual of the balance of my life. And so if there's blue, red, and orange for the various buckets that I'm paying attention to, and they're sort of uniformly throughout the calendar, then I realize that I'm doing a good job balancing. But if it's all blue for Miss Now Misses, or it's more red than for Elegant Entrepreneur, it helps me visually cue me that I need to do a better job balancing. So I get up at 5:19 in the morning. I get up early and I work hard, but I enjoy what I do. And I have the flexibility to take time to hang out with my family, to go to the Valentine's Day party at my son's first grade classroom. And I think that flexibility and that joy is what makes it doable. Instead of juggling, I'm enjoying.
I think that one of the unique challenges, well, it's not unique to women, but I think women maybe feel it a little bit differently, is the pressure to shift back and forth between multiple roles. I guess I'm wondering how that's addressed in your book, or what sort of support and advice you offer female founders who are trying to be good at lots of different kinds of things, including raising children and being a partner.
So the book is structured in this series of chapters, 12 chapters that are the steps from idea to exit. And then in between each chapter is an elegant insight, which is something that I wish I had known, someone I interviewed shared, that helps make spanning those steps easier, especially more elegant, more ingenious and simple than when I stumbled through it all. And my all-time favorite insight is Elegant Insight 11, and it's lean in for your startup so you can stand upright for yourself. And so in talking to women and my readers, it's, yes, it is hard to have a startup. It is hard to take an idea and build a company and be a successful company and generate revenue and continue to grow and continue to scale in an ever-changing economy and market. But when you're doing it for yourself, you have the control. You have the power to take the time that you might need to hire someone to backfill your role if you have an ill family member, if you're starting a family, if you need to travel. And so being able to create your own goals and achieve them gives you the freedom and flexibility to design the lifestyle and definition of success that is right for you. You're not stuck trying to make the corporate America success paradigm fit your life and shoehorn your personal life and your family into it. You can make an all-encompassing success goal.
Your book seems also to address or pay a lot of attention to the emotional life of the startup journey. You want to say a little bit about why you decided to focus on that and some of the core lessons?
In writing Elegant Entrepreneur, I was really writing the book that I wish was available when I started. I've read so many business books and learned so much from them, but none of them told you how it felt as you were scaling, as you were fundraising, as you were finding a co-founder and dealing with paperwork, with business plans. And so it was very important to me to end every chapter with a how does it feel section. And I think that's important to talk about. Like, yes, here are the left brain logical steps to building a company. But if you don't talk about the right brain, that's going to trip you up. If you don't anticipate the emotional hurdles that are coming, they're going to blindside you and slow down the success of your company and your self-confidence in being able to run the company. So I tried very hard to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, because I feel that most media and most books don't do that. We highlight the amazing ink cover moments, and we don't talk about deciding whether you're paying your mortgage or you're paying your developer to finish the project. And there's something to be said about knowing what you're doing and going in eyes wide open.
That's very much in line with this podcast as a project, which is to help entrepreneurs think about how to live well, whole lives that are emotionally well and relationally well. So obviously, I'm sold on it as an important conversation. What are the more unique emotional challenges that you think women experience?
I think women tend to lump themselves and their startups into a conglomerate. I feel that our male counterparts, and I'm generalizing, which is always a bad idea, but our male counterparts do a better job separating, like, I am me, this is my job, this is my company. And women seem to internalize and own all of it. The success of the company reflects on them personally. And to a degree, that's very important. You need the passion. You need to understand your why and what you're driving towards. But you also need to be able to just put it down and take a break and recharge and come back to it fresh. And so I think that that's one of the larger differences.
So for folks who are listening to this, there's a chunk of people who listen to this podcast who are parents, who are raising the next generation of entrepreneurs, be them little girls or little boys. Are there things that you would like to see change in the way that we socialize girls into entrepreneurship that you think might help modify some of these inequalities and patterns that are so kind of miserable in terms of female entrepreneurs?
Absolutely. And that's a personal soapbox of mine, the education component. Our schools do some basic balancing of checkbooks and a little bit of coding, but why can't we discuss entrepreneurship and building a business, just the basics? Not every child is going to grow up to be an entrepreneur. But even if they aren't entrepreneurs, they're going to work for a business, and understanding how that works and how that grows is going to make them a much more effective employee and manager and salesperson. And as far as little girls go, I feel like the media could do a much better job highlighting prominent female founders. In doing the interviews for this book, each founder that I spoke with asked me if I knew so-and-so and so-and-so, and I didn't. And one of my favorite interviewees, Karen Merrick, was the co-founder of WebMethods. She had the most successful software IPO in history. She lives 8 miles from my house. I had never heard her story. And I think that's wrong. And I think if we can tell the stories, if we can highlight amazing women building businesses, solving problems, making the world better, I think that's going to expand our children's horizons as to what they can do, what they can accomplish.
And how about for the founders that are listening that are male founders or are other female founders, but are, you know, interested in trying to help promote female-owned startups? What are some of the things that you would like to see your founder colleagues do to support the success of women?
I would love to see more female-centric and even child, like little girl-centric, middle school-centric, high school-centric workshops and talks. Let's like meet the author, meet the entrepreneur, meet the local female founder, or, you know, let's have a girls group for business ideas and foster a sense of community and access to all of the different people that can help them come up with ideas and grow those ideas and foster the entrepreneurial spirit from a young age.
So it sounds like much of your hope would be in exposure to the tremendous successes that female entrepreneurs are already having, as well as increased mentorship and training for newer female entrepreneurs or children who are growing up with the possibility of being entrepreneurs.
Yes, I was an accidental entrepreneur. I think it would have been so much easier for me to start my company if I had been exposed to the concept of entrepreneurship and all of the possibilities that come along with that choice in life. And so, yeah, it's a very strong passion of mine. And I'm actually finishing up a children's book, E is for Entrepreneur, to add a little entrepreneur literacy at a very young alphabet level.
Fantastic. Yeah, that sounds like that will be a good seller among our community.
You know, I have construction ABC. Why can't I have, you know, E is for entrepreneur, L is for liquidation preference. Let's make it fun and interesting and silly and accessible.
Well, anything else that you would like to say about your work and your kind of mission of promoting women in this kind of work?
So the entire mission behind Elegant Entrepreneur is to lower the barriers to entry and success for female founders. And Elegant Entrepreneur isn't because I am personally elegant. It's meant in the definition of a simple and ingenious solution to a problem. So in seeing the void of female founders, in meeting so many women with ideas that haven't taken the leap, I really hope that anyone listening who's interested picks up a book. Or better yet, if you know someone who just needs that little nudge to go from idea to entrepreneur, tell them about the book, send them a link to the book, and foster the next round of female founders.
Very nice. I kind of like the double meaning of elegant, both in terms of simple solution, but maybe as a nod towards some femininity, that pretty girls can be entrepreneurs too.
Absolutely. And that I have an elegant entrepreneur lipstick because, yes, it can be fun to be an entrepreneur. And there is a feminine side and it's pitch perfect. You put on that red and it's like war paint. You're ready.
It's the new power suit.
Exactly.
Well, thanks so much, Danielle, for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with us about your work and your mission of making the playing field a little bit easier for men and women in the tech world.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.